Okay? No, I won't. All right, let's begin. This morning I want to look at this verse in Romans 12, verse 9. Remember, Paul is writing to the Roman church, and he has been speaking to them all the way to chapter 11 about some important truths. And in verse 12, we find a whole list of practical exhortation by the Apostle Paul for the church in Rome and for us as well in the New Testament church. Romans 12:9 says, "Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good." The phrase "let love be without dissimulation" basically means let love be without hypocrisy. Let there be a genuine love, not a fake love. Okay? That smiles at people, smiles at others, but the heart is not with the person. New Living Translation says, don't just pretend that you love others. Don't pretend to love others. But notice this two strong word that Paul uses here. Abhor that which is evil and cleave to that which is good. In contexts of love. You know, love is not some sort of sentimentality. This verse tells us it's not a feeling which is strong towards something or someone that passes no judgment on their behavior, whether good or evil. So Paul here is saying that Christian love should be holy and goodly. And he goes on to tell us that love involves discrimination between what is good and what is evil. You know, a love, you cannot say I love if you don't hate what is to be hated. Isn't it? The opposite of love is hate. Okay? And today the world is teaching that we are not to hate anything or anyone. We are to love everybody. Even in Christian circle, right? Doesn't matter what doctrine you teach or what you believe, just love. Love is what is important, right? But Paul doesn't say that. Paul says love hates evil and sticks to that which is good. So love doesn't blur distinctions. That's very important to understand. And the contrast between love and hate in this passage is so graphic. It is sensitive to evil. And it holds fast to that which is good. It's not just mere sentimentality. Today, we have people who are sentimental about things, right? Isn't it? About people and things that they like. They are so sentimental, they're attached, right? But love is not supposed to be that. Paul is saying that the word abhor is a very strong word actually in English. It's a very strong word. You know, the word abhor basically means to be disgusted. It means to detest. It means to loathe. That's the idea behind this word abhor. So Paul is not saying we just need to prefer good over evil. He's not just saying we need to avoid evil, but he says we need to detest evil. We need to abhor or hate, be disgusted at it. That's what he's saying. And this is our Christian life. You know, this is a daily living. This is how a disciple of Jesus Christ lives on a daily basis. He has two things every day in his life which he needs to abhor and something that he needs to be stuck, which is good. This is our lifestyle because both this word is in present tense. This should be our continual habit of abhorring and cleaving. You know, this is not something new that Paul says in Romans. It's all over the Bible, in New Testament, in the Old Testament. In Psalm 34, verse 14, it says, "Be turned from evil and do good." Hebrews 1:9, this passage is about Jesus Christ, and it says that thou hast loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Amos 5:14 says, "Seek good and not evil, that you may live, and so the Lord, the God of hosts, shall be with you as you have spoken. Hate the evil and love the good." Well, in the world, the order is reversed. Hate the good, love the evil. It's what we see all around. So, you know, and there are many examples, you know, we can go to that, but I think this is enough to establish the fact that God hates evil and loves righteousness. And He desires that we do the same. What is the danger of not abhorring that which is evil? You know, we don't realize it, but you know what? It is so, you know, we can become very passive sometimes, isn't it? We can become very tolerant towards evil, okay? And we just don't want to take responsibility or action because we know we're going to go into a lot of explanation and a lot of problems. So we kind of tolerate. But, you know, it is a dangerous road to take. Look at this in Psalm 36. It says, "The transgression of the wicked says within my heart, there is no fear of God before his eyes. For he flatters himself in his own eyes, that his iniquity shall not be found out and be hated. The words of his mouth are iniquity and deceit." Now watch this. "He has left off to be wise and to do good." Oh, that takes to a different direction, isn't it? He has left off to be wise and he starts doing that which is evil and no more good. Verse 4, "He devises iniquity upon his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good." And watch the last phrase. "He abhors not evil." You know, we might think that little sin or little evil is okay. In the sense, I can moderate it, or I can, you know, manage it, you know. But, you know, think about this. What is the goal of sin? Paul said, the goal of sin is dominate you, isn't it? He wants to dominate. So all this deceitfulness that sin gives us, gives you pleasure for some time. Or the classic one is that no one will find out. Okay, I can take care of it, I'll manage it a little bit, and you know, just a little bit is okay, I'm not going to go overboard. This is the deceitfulness of sin. We should not be deceived by sin, because a little leaven leavens the whole lump. That is very clear, isn't it? Paul said in 1 Corinthians 5:6, little leaven leavens the whole lump. Think about Achan. We have an amazing story in the Old Testament about Achan. What did he think? He thought that little bit of taking the spoil and hiding it under the earth is fine. No one will find out. Not even any person in Israel will find out. Not even God will find out, isn't it? But did God find out? He did. Did all the Israel come to know about this? He did. Our sin will find out. We cannot hide it. So not to hate causes us to tolerate. And there is a danger in yoking with evil whenever or whatever we do not abhor or hate. You know, John Wesley said this, "What one generation tolerates," listen to this, "what one generation tolerates, the next generation will embrace." It is so powerful, profound statement. And that's why we need to really be so strong what we not allow our kids to indulge into, really, because we are raising up a next generation. You know, and we do not, today homosexuality is, what was it, years ago? It was abhorred, right? And then accepted. Now it's normalized, you know? And very soon, next, it will be, it's a lifestyle. Or in fact, it's come to that, like it's a lifestyle. It's okay. That's how God has made something. That is not abhorring evil. One quote I would like to read. This is an 18th century English poet. His name is Alexander Pope. And he writes this in his one of the book, Essay of Man. He says, "Vice is a monster of so frightful mien as to be hated needs but to be seen. Yet too often, familiar with her face, we first endure, then pity, then embrace." So what is he saying? He's saying that the people's attitude towards sin softens through the exposure of sin and through tolerating a little bit of it. It says that he says, the more we are exposed to sin, the more comfortable and desensitized to it we become. When a sin is increasingly portrayed as positive and right and people stop speaking against it, that society inevitably moves from disapproval to embrace. So true. Don't we see that in psychological movement, the same thing? We see that, right? Something that was painted disorder is now normal. You know, there are so many kind of disorder today. Anger disorder, and they just call it, it's not sin, it's a disorder. Hyper child and, cursing and, doing things. It's all disorder. It has nothing to do with, it's no more moral issue. It's a disorder, And very soon it will be normalized, isn't it? It's saying, it's normal, that's how he is. Remember, what one generation tolerates, the next embraces. I like this psalm in Psalm 101, verse 3. And here we see the vows of David recorded in this passage. Remember, a lukewarm approach to evil will ultimately destroy the Christian. We should not have a lukewarm approach. In Psalm 101, it says, "I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O, when will thou come to me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart." He's talking about how I'm going to operate in my own family, right? My family life. He said, "I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set no worthless thing before my eyes. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not fasten its grip on me. Whosoever secretly slanders his neighbor, I will cut him off. Him who has a high look, a proud heart, I will not allow." Meaning he's saying, I will not tolerate such a person near me. So this is a vow he's made, that I'm not going to tolerate things like that. So abhorring means, really, that I detest it and I don't tolerate even a little bit. Okay, that's the meaning behind it. It also means that we take sin seriously. Proverbs 14:9, it says, "Fools laugh at sin." You know what they do? They make a joke out of it. Yeah. Sin is a joke, right? They laugh about it. Sin is not a joke. It's not a joke. Only the fool thinks that way. Only a fool thinks. You know, today even Christians mock at sin. You know how? All that matters is to love Jesus. That's a cliche, right? All that matters, just love Jesus. And, basically they're saying, no matter how you live, as long as I love Jesus, that's the focus. Oh, this is a big one. I've always heard since the time I'm a Christian. God hates sin, but loves the sinner. as if they are two different identity, right? And they go into the whole explanation that the sin is inside. There's another substance separate from the man. The person is nice and the sin is something tangible and separated. We should never laugh at evil, really. We should never laugh at evil, but rather abhor that. In front of our kids and anywhere we go, we don't tolerate it. We show that face to evil, right? Amos 5:10, they hate him that rebukes in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh rightly. So, here we quickly understand the idea of hating evil is still alive. See the Satan's deception. The idea of hating evil is still alive, only the definition has been changed. The definition of evil has been changed. It says the hate, they hate him that rebuke in the gate. Is rebuke considered good today? No. No one likes it. They don't like it. If you rebuke someone for a wrongdoing, you are considered to be hateful. Remember that prophet we spoke about last week came to Ahab. Jehoshaphat said to Ahab, call the prophet. And he said, no, I don't want to call him because every time he speaks something bad about me. Okay, I hate him. And they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. So they have really compromised and reversed the order. Think about Eli's son. Eli, the father, he did rebuke their son, but he did not condemn it. He did not take drastic action against it. Think about the church in Corinthians, that they were allowing a fornicator to be there and doing nothing about it. Tolerating to be there. And guess how many churches are there today? The members are in the church, they are living in sin, but the leadership doesn't do anything about it. They're tolerating. Proverbs 17:15 says, he that justifies the wicked and condemns the righteous is an abomination to the Lord. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil. And this is talking about Isaiah 5:20, where God says, Israel, that they are calling evil good and good evil. You know, another problem about really hating is that we are very quick to hate evil in others. In others. And I think that's a great deception, really. That we do not hate that same thing in ourselves. Proverbs 6:16 says, these six things does the Lord hate. Seven are the abomination unto him. A proud look. Oh, he's proud. This guy is so arrogant and proud. What about me? No comments. He's a liar, man. What about me? I don't see that, right? Hands that shed innocent blood and heart that devise wicked imagination, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that sows discord among brethren is hated by God. It's not just a light hatred. It's disgust to God. That's what abomination, the word abomination means. So we are to express our hatred for evil by our withdrawal from it and separating from it. A wise man in Proverbs 14:16 says, fears and departs from evil. You know, abhorring includes departing, right? Something that you hate and abhor and detest, you want to separate yourself from that, isn't it? But people today do say that they hate it, but yet they don't separate it from it. And how do we depart from evil? What helps us to depart? And I think one of the things, most important thing, which is mercy of God, is the warnings in the scriptures. The warnings cause us to depart from evil. And you know what? People don't take warnings seriously. Isn't it? It is so true in the normal natural world too, right? You're driving the car, there is a warning, and yet, you know, people want to do that very thing that is warned of not doing, isn't it? And they don't take it warning seriously. But we need to take warning seriously in the scriptures. When God said that Achan and his whole family was swallowed in the earth, better believe it. Okay. When Ananias and Sapphira were killed dead for lying, you better believe it. It's a warning for us in the church. Don't take lying lightly. It's okay, I can lie a little bit. No, it's not okay. Ezekiel 3:21, nevertheless, if thou warn the righteous man that the righteous sin not, he that does not sin, he shall surely live because he is warned. Also, thou hast delivered thy soul. So when we hear the warning from the Lord, the wise person listens and he obeys. And he says, you know what, my goodness, I don't want to go that route. I better be careful. So we are to abhor evil, abhor sin around us and in us, and depart from it. But something Paul says also, that we are to cleave to that which is good. The word cleave actually is the word, actually really it's the Greek word where we get the word glue. Glue. So in other words, it says stick or be glued to that which is good. In 1 Thessalonians 5:21, but examine everything carefully. And Rudy spoke amazing, beautiful message last week of how we are to prove or test everything carefully. And then when what we find is good, stick to it. Right? Hold fast to that which is good. Abstain from every form of evil. Again, this is present tense. Stick to that which is good. You know why? Because it can easily slip away. It's so true. In the natural realm. Think about it. We hear people saying, oh, I was able to do so and so. I was good at it. I knew algebra left, right, and center. Not for Gabriel, he's learning. Okay. I used to know calculus. I used to play an instrument so well. But it slipped away. There are some things which are really, really, really important, and we need to make sure that they don't slip away. We need to stick to that which is good. That's why do we examine? What is the purpose of examining things, approving and testing? What is the whole goal of it? The goal is to find out if this is good or bad. And if it's good, then embrace it. Hold it and never let it go. Cling to that which is good. Let me show you the intensity this word cleave or stick or glue has. Ruth chapter 1 verse 14, it says, now you know the story, Ruth and her sister-in-law, Orpah, they both lost their husband. There is a famine in the land, and their mother-in-law is moving away, and she's telling both her daughter-in-law to go back to their houses. Okay, it's no point coming with me. And it says, they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law. So she said, okay, I'll go to my people. But Ruth clave unto her. Now, watch how strong this word is, okay? And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For where you go, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people and thy God my God. Where thou diest, will I die. and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. What a strong definition and understanding of cleave means. That you're determined. You're determined. You're not forgetful. You're not passive. You're not taking it lightly. You're determined that this is what I want badly, and I'm going to keep it. That's the idea. You know, sometimes we take a lot of good things in our life for granted. Really. Good people, good things, good understanding, good values. We take it for granted, and we only understand its value when they are really lost or taken away from us. We don't treasure it while it was with us. Psalm 1:1 says, blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of ungodly, nor stands in the way of the sinner, nor sits in the seat of scornful. There is a progression here. First he walks and thinks it's fine. I can have the company and it's fine. Then start standing with them and discussing and fellowshipping. And then guess what? He starts sitting in the seat of the scornful. But many think, like, you know what? It's fine to walk. It's fine to walk. And, you know, I know myself. I can guard myself from sitting and standing with them. You're deceived. We are deceived in thinking that we can just walk and we will be fine. We see all over the scriptures. We see all the way that a little leads to completion. You stand and you start sitting with the scornful, and what happens? You become like them. You think like them. You behave like them, and you define things like they do. This is what exactly happens. 2 Kings 3:1. It's not in your notes, but listen. It's talking about Jehoram, son of Ahab. Okay, son of Ahab and Jezebel. He began to reign over Israel, and 12 years he reigned. And he worked evil in the sight of the Lord, but not like his father and mother, for he put away the image of Baal that his father had made. Verse 3. Nevertheless, he cleaved unto the sins of Jeroboam, which made Israel to sin. He departed not therefrom. What do we understand? Probably he's happy that he has destroyed Baal worship in Israel. Like, got rid of it. But there is one thing that he's still clinging to. That is the sin of Jeroboam. And you know what was the sin of Jeroboam? You know, if you read the Old Testament, Jeroboam had actually made calves, and he put it in Dan and one more place, so that the people would not go to Judah to worship in the true temple there. He would keep them to themselves. They don't want them to go beyond the boundary. So he said, okay, you want to go to worship? Don't worry, I'll have over here. You go and worship. He clung to that. And this is so true, because many things people like to be clinging to. Money, power, greed, selfishness, pride, lust. They might give up some things, but they keep something pet to them. Remember Psalm 119, it says, my soul cleaves to the dust. That's by default, that's what happens. Our thinking is earthly. But you know what? Thy law I love, it says. One of the strongest, I think, warning is from the king, King Solomon. It says in 1 Kings 11, Solomon loved many foreign women. And it says he claved unto these in love. And guess what? They turned his heart away. Downfall of Solomon. He was little lax in being careful You know, being lax is the first stage towards lawlessness. Well, lax means that a quality of being careless. Careless and not being careful. So, we see that his heart was turned from serving the Lord. And this is warning after warnings we have in the scriptures, that little bit we give into, we go all the way. Look at 2 Kings 18 in your notes. And Hosea, king of Israel, did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that David his father did. He removed the high places. Good job. He broke the images. Amazing. Okay. Cut down the groves and broke in pieces the brazen serpent that Moses had made. For unto those days the children of Israel did burn incense to it. Oh, that's crazy, right? They made the brazen serpent an idol, right? And they were sacrificing to it. And he broke that as well. He trusted in the Lord of God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor any that were before him. Verse 6. For he clave to the Lord and departed not from following him. He kept his commandments, which the Lord commanded Moses. So we see King Hosea over here is clinging or sticking to the Lord. And we see that he gave up a lot of things which were evil in order to do that which is good, to be stuck to good. So remember, when we are clinging or sticking to something other than God, it will turn your heart away. We have the warning in the scriptures. John, 2 John 1:8 says, look to yourselves, that we lose not those things which we have wrought, but that we may receive a full reward. So there is a possibility of losing all that we have accumulated spiritually, right? Talking. We can lose it. Behold, I come quickly, hold fast that which thou hast, that no man take away thy crown. This is the end of the book. Hold fast to that what you have. Don't lose it. You can lose, because if we don't guard it, we can lose it. Things like we have already overcome, you know, we want to make sure that we stick to that and don't go back. So we see that Eliezer, in 2 Samuel 23:9, it says, he arose and smote Philistine. Now, this word again, cleave, is used in this passage, 2 Samuel 23 verse 9. Okay, and it's talking about Eleazar, who is one of the mighty men of David, out of the three. He said he, and they were in the battle with the Philistine, and says he arose and smote the Philistine until his hand was weary and his hand clave unto the sword. So imagine he's in the battle, okay, and he's slaughtering over them, and he's tired and he's weary, but he's clinging to his sword, it says. And that's the idea of clinging to something that is good, and even though when we get weary, right? Clinging to that which is good. Even no matter if we are in the times of affliction or trials, cleave. That's the time when we throw the sword away many times. You know, Job 27:6, Job said, my righteousness I hold fast and will not let it go. And, you know, think about Job. He was going through a lot in his life, but he not one time cursed God or blamed God, but he says, I hold fast, I stick to my righteousness, and I will not let it go, he says. My heart shall not reproach me so long as I live. So he said, I'm not going to be reproached by my own self, because I'm not going to give away my righteousness. I'm not going to throw that down. I'm going to hold it. So we need to hold fast to things that are to the Lord, to the commandments, to the scriptures. And you know, we hold fast the instruction, the Bible says. Hold fast the instruction, don't let it go. Proverbs 4:13 says, take fast hold of instruction. And today, you know, Christians are seldom interested in hearing instruction, first of all, and let alone holding it, right? They don't want instruction because, you know why? They want to live just like the people of Israel lived in the days of Judges, doing that which is right in their own eyes. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. Enter not in the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away. He's saying the same thing in many different words. So, hold fast the good implies that if we don't, so then it can slip away. It slip away. We are people who forget, right? We do forget. I don't remember what I ate yesterday. You might. You had a good meal probably. But we don't remember what was preached last Sunday or last to last, right? And we do forget. And a lot of things that are good in our lives, we tend to forget. And that's why preaching and instruction is so important. Because it reminds us over and over and over and over again. So that it refreshes our memory and we keep holding. That's the job of the preacher. You know, think about a lot of messages that this pulpit preaches is a reminder of things which you've already heard. But you have forgotten. And we have forgotten and we refresh. Hebrews 2:1 says, therefore we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. So there is a danger of slipping away. Paul said, what is the first thing Paul said to Timothy in doing the church? Have soup kitchen. Or build schools. Orphanage. No. Preach the word. That was his charge. Preach the word. Don't care about people. What they think. Really. Don't just be nice and comfortable to them in preaching. Don't. He said, do it in season, out of season, whether they feel it bad or no. Don't care about it. Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. And that's what we want to do. We don't want to think two times before saying something in the sense that, oh, I'm going to offend someone or we're going to offend someone. No, the preaching has to be done irrespective of what people think. For the time will come when they, listen to this danger. For the time will come, they will not endure sound doctrine. That is a powerful warning. They will not endure sound doctrine. But after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. So they want preachers and teachers who can tickle their ears. Say something good about them. And we have so many people come right in Delhi and they could not stand because they could not endure the sound doctrine, really. That was the bottom line, right? They could not endure. And it says, they shall turn away their ears from truth and shall be turned unto stories, fables. And this is Paul writing in 2 Timothy before he is about to die. He said, preach the word, preach the word. Peter said the same thing. 2 Peter 1:12. He said, wherefore I will not be negligent to put you always in remembrance of these things, though you know them. See that? Though you know them and be established in the present truth. Yea, I think it fit, as long as I am in this tabernacle or in this body, to stir you up by putting you in remembrance. Cleave. Stick to good preaching. Really. Stick to good preaching. That's what he says. Because preaching stirs us up to apply in our lives things that we hear. Preaching is a safeguard. In Philippians 3:1, it says, "Finally, my brother, rejoice in the Lord. To write the same thing again is no trouble to me, and it is a safeguard for you." So Paul is saying here that I am writing the same thing again for your safety. For your safety. I'm going to close in a few minutes with these few verses. Titus 1:9, it says, "Holding fast the faithful word as he hath been taught, that he may be by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convince the gainsayers." Now, the gainsayers are people who are there for profit, some kind of gain. Not just necessarily money, but could be fame, could be power, could be to be center of attraction, whatever that may be. For there, why does he say that? Why does he say to hold fast to the faithful word that he has been taught, Titus has been taught? "For there are many unruly and vain talkers and deceivers." And notice this phrase, "especially they of the circumcision." Not someone outside, but of the circumcision. Okay. "Whose mouths must be stopped." How do we stop? What is the remedy here to stop the mouth of such people? Preach the word. Just preach the word. Do what is right. Do what is right. Stick to what is right and let pieces fall in its place. And we try to do wrong to make it right. Don't do wrong to make it right. He said the way we stop the mouth is by continue in the teaching, by holding fast what you have been taught. "Who suffered whole houses." You know, I looked at this phrase, "who suffered whole houses." It's talking about they actually deceived the whole family. That's the idea. The whole family. How? By teaching. See, by teaching things which they ought not. And this is the agenda, for filthy lucre's sake. That is for gain. And then verse 16 is a very powerful description. They profess that they know God. They love God. They want God in their lives and everything. But in their actions, in their behavior, they deny it. See what it says. Being abominable, disobedient, and unto every good work disqualified or reprobate. Strong warning for us to hold fast the form of sound words. Because in 2 Timothy 1:14 he says, "That good thing, Timothy, which was committed unto thee, keep." He said, keep it, guard it, guard it. There are some traditions that we need to hold. Not the tradition of men, but the tradition of what we have been taught. In 2 Thessalonians 2:15 it says, "Therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which you have been taught, whether by word or by epistle." Hold good preaching. Stick to good instruction. Stick to sound words. Stick to what we've been taught. And you know what? Stick to good thoughts. Stick to good thoughts. Do not allow evil imagination to make a nest in our minds, in our brain. It's Philippians 4:8. Paul said, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, just, pure, lovely, good report, and of any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things." This is actually our thought life should be. This is a parameter or fence around my thought life. Anything beyond that or ahead of that, I need to abhor that which is evil. And finally, closing. Hold fast to each other. Stick to each other. Okay. It says, brethren, Psalm 133, it says, "Behold how good." See, it's good. and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It's good. Let's not give that good away. It's good to hold together as one in unity. There's one place in the Bible I like the word addiction. In 1 Corinthians 16:15, it says, I beseech you, brethren, you know the house of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints. That's a good addiction to have. Well, the word addiction here is means devoted. Okay, and King James translates it as addiction. You know what addiction is, right? When we get the idea of addiction, something that you can't give it up, right? You hold on to. So he's saying, give yourself to the ministering of the saints, not to be consumed with self. You know, I was reading this in Job 41:15. If you have the Bible, you can turn to this verse, and I think it's awesome passage. I saw this morning. And here, Job is actually describing, God is describing about a creature, Leviathan. I don't know if you read. Some say it was a dragon, some say it was a fish or a mammal, whatever. I don't know, but it's some kind of creature, that's for sure. And God describes and says, his scale are his pride, shut up together that no air can come between them. Verse 17, they are joined one to another, they stick together that they cannot be sundered. That's an amazing thing. That's the idea of sticking with each other. It says, see, shut up together that no air can come between them. You know, that's how brethren should live. Not allow any kind of air to come between us. Be joined one to another, stick together that they may not be departed or be separated. You can't separate the scale of this creature. It's so interwoven. I was looking, you know, how glue is made. I don't know if you saw. We use it in our normal daily life, you know, sticking it. The glue actually has a chemical bond and it has a physical bond. The chemical bond is when the molecules actually go and they get stuck to the object it's sticking to. And the physical bond is interesting because what happens is that when you stick something to another object, glue actually goes into all the small tiny pores and gaps and the valleys, little bit valleys that are there. And it actually joins it together firmly, never to detach it again. So it fills all the small pores, and that's how actually the glue bonds two things together. And that's a good idea, what cleaning means. That we don't want tiny, crevasses or what? Crevices, yeah. Crevices in the body. We don't want tiny crevices. We want to fill it with glue. With glue. So, in closing, we have a choice every day for our lives. Abhor that which is evil and cling or stick to that which is good. What are we going to cleave to? Question. Who are we going to cleave to or hold fast to? What are we going to cling? Or what are we going to cling to in future? Deuteronomy 30:19. Moses says, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou may love the Lord thy God, obey his voice, and that you may cleave unto him, for he is your life and length of your days. Remember, love makes a discrimination. It's not sentimentality. It's not emotion. Love, true love, biblical love, hates that which is evil and sticks to that which is good. That's a character of love. So that's what it means. A hypocritical love is that I love even that which is evil. A hypocritical love is a fake love. We don't want fake love. And that's a strong exhortation that Paul gives in Romans and in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, end of the book, where Paul already knows this church has faith, hope, and love. And he tells them, yet at the end, hold fast to that which is good and abstain from evil. So we'll close here, and if you have anything, you can add to the message.